Good morning, Oregon. I'm Finn J.D. John, FJ at OffbeatOregon.com, and this is the thrice weekly Offbeat Oregon History Podcast. Thank you for queuing me up, and I hope you enjoy the show today. This story was first published on February 20th of 2011 under the headline, When Dynamite Truck Blew Up in Roseburg, It Looked Like Nuclear War. Here we go. It's hard to imagine what it must have been like in the cockpit of the Frontier Airlines passenger liner, flying along at 17,000 feet in the middle of the night, when the pilot saw the mushroom cloud rising over an Oregon city. The year was 1959. All over the country, children were ducking and covering to prepare for the nuclear war that everyone knew was a real possibility. Only 2 years earlier, the Soviet Union had sent Sputnik 1 into orbit, demonstrating that they could drop a nuclear warhead or anything else they wanted to, pretty much anywhere they liked, the same as we could. Quite why the Kremlin would have picked Roseburg, Oregon as a target would have been unclear. But with a glowing, fiery ball of evidence rising slowly into the air above that little Douglas County city, the pilots can be excused for not asking the question before radioing the Medford Airport control tower that global thermonuclear war was breaking out, with Roseburg at ground zero, an hour and 14 minutes after midnight on August 7th. Luckily for most of us, they were wrong. What they were witnessing was not nuclear war, but the biggest human-caused disaster in Oregon history, something still referred to in Douglas County knowingly and with a slight touch of reverence as the blast. The blast involved 6.5 tons of explosives, 13 times the amount used in the state highway department's ill-starred attempt to blow a dead whale off the beach in Florence 11 years later. It left a crater 60 feet wide and 20 feet deep. It leveled all the buildings for blocks around and took the glass out of windows 9 miles away, and it killed 13 people, a number that seems miraculously small considering the scale of the destruction. Here's how it happened. George Rutherford, a truck driver for a Washington company called Pacific Powder Company, was making a delivery to the Gerritsen Building Supply in downtown Roseburg. But he got there after the business had closed for the day, so he parked his truck next to Gerritsen's and walked 3 blocks to the Umpqua Hotel where he checked in for the night. Inside the truck were 2 tons of dynamite and 4.5 tons of blasting powder. A few feet away from it was a building that a few hours later would be completely engulfed in fire. No one knows how the Gerritsen fire got started. All the evidence is, shall we say, gone. It might have been a pile of oily rags bursting spontaneously into flame. It might have been a hobo's jungle fire by the railroad tracks. It might even have been an employee's cigarette left in the wrong place hours before. What everyone does know is what happened when the flames got into the barrels of paint thinner and kerosene and other flammable spirits kept in Gerritsen's warehouse. That fire got very big and very smoky, very fast. The alarm was sounded around 1 a.m. when a young mill worker named Dennis Tandy, driving home with his pregnant wife in their tiny air-cooled Fiat, noticed the fire. After calling the fire department, Dennis stayed to help. Marilyn, his wife, stayed in the car about a block away. A quarter hour later, she would suddenly become a widow, and the tiny, flimsy-looking Fiat 600 would save her life. Firefighters were on the scene within 2 minutes, and with Tandy's help started battling to suppress the fire in Gerritsen's. Fueled by paint products, the smoke was thick and poisonous and pouring past Rutherford's truck, obscuring the placards on its flanks that read, "Explosives." Minutes ticked by. The sides of the truck started to buckle and warp. Then the truck was on fire. Then, when the blast hit George Rutherford, he was racing from his hotel to his truck. Awakened by the sirens, he'd been desperately trying to get to his rig before it was too late, and then, all at once, it was too late. The explosion blew him back toward the hotel and took off a piece of his nose. Bystanders had to physically restrain him to keep him from running back into the inferno. "Let me go," he kept saying. "I've got to go see how many people I've killed." Several firefighters on the scene were literally blown apart. The mayor of Roseburg, a little later, picked up a firefighter's glove and found a hand in it. Several people nearby were killed by broken glass, a woman and her daughter slain by the picture window through which they'd been watching the fire, and another woman picked up by the blast and thrown into the window of a car dealership. One unlucky young man had a bolt from Rutherford's truck bury itself in the back of his head. He died a month later. Others survived with various injuries. A total of 125 were hurt. In the wake of the blast, Roseburg neighbors came together to help one another get through. Lumber company trucks came downtown and handed out sheets of plywood so that people could board up their blown-out windows. Shopkeepers labored for days picking up debris and sweeping up glass. Rutherford's company tried, in a very clumsy sort of way, to throw him under the bus, but these efforts only drew attention to the fact that they had ordered Rutherford to leave the truck in town for the night. There was a perfectly serviceable explosives depot outside town, but apparently company officials were worried that someone would steal the dynamite if it were left parked there, so they had actually told him not to use it. Perhaps in response to Pacific Powder Company's thumb-fingered effort at blame-shifting, the Douglas County District Attorney filed an indictment for manslaughter against the company, but did not file any charges against Rutherford himself. Eventually, the Oregon Supreme Court ruled that a company couldn't be prosecuted for manslaughter, and nothing came of this. But Pacific Powder could and did get sued by a great many people, as did Rutherford. The company in the end paid out a little over $1 million in damages. The incident, as can well be imagined, cast a shadow over Rutherford that stayed with him the rest of his life. He died in 1996. Within a few years, insurance payments and other assistance had financed a rebuilding of downtown Roseburg. Other than a few plaques around town, a visitor today would never know anything like this had happened. Still, the blast cast a long shadow. Quote,
"Years later, when I was in the service, guys would ask me where I was from,"
historian and Douglas County native Dale Greenlee recalls.
"When I'd say Roseburg, Oregon, 90% of the guys would look at me and say, 'The blast.'"
Key sources in this story included works by Barry Serafin, Brent Wolf, and Dale Greenlee. Well, that's our show for today. Thanks again for listening, and I hope you enjoyed it. This podcast is part of Offbeat Oregon History, a public history resource for the state we love. Check out our hub page at offbeatoregon.com to explore all the other things we do. Visuals that go with today's show can be found at offbeatoregon.com, where you will also find full citations to the sources for this story. The podcast is covered under a Creative Commons license. For details of that, see offbeatoregon.com/cc. Our theme music is by the Atlas String Band and was written by Carmen Ficarra. Listen and download more at atlasstringband.com. Got an idea for a show I should do or just want to say hi? Drop me a line at fj@offbeatoregon.com or ping me on Twitter @offbeatoregon or send a message through the Facebook page at facebook.com/oregon.1859. Also, do let me know if you're ever going to be in Corvallis with time for a cup of coffee or a pint of Hammerhead and an inclination to talk about Oregon history. Fresh episodes of Offbeat Oregon History come your way around 6 a.m. every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday morning. So if you're looking forward to the next one, well, you haven't got long to wait. Until then, go fill up the rest of today with good stuff. Bye now.